Welcome to Lubetkin's Other Blog Podcast. This is episode 22 for Thursday, June 22nd, 2006. I'm Steve Lubetkin, host of these podcasts. I'm the managing partner of Lubetkin Communications. We're a strategic public relations counseling firm in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and the leading producer of business podcasts for corporate clients in New Jersey and eastern Pennsylvania. We've been counseling clients about their communication strategies since December 2004, when we left the corporate side of the PR desk after 25 years in corporate public relations. In these podcasts, we try to bring you relevant content about public relations, communications, and journalism. And sometimes that means we bring you interviews with people in these fields, and other times we're bringing you content from seminars, speeches, and other programs. Today we present part two of our three-part series of presentations from the Create, Communicate, Connect, Best Practices for Effective Marketing and Communications, the spring conference of the New Jersey Communications, Advertising, and Marketing Association. These programs were recorded on June 1st, 2006, at the legendary Princeton campus of the Sarnoff Research Center. That is the birthplace of so much of the radio and television technology that we take for granted today. Now, the New Jersey Communications, Advertising, and Marketing Association, also known as NJCAMA, is a nonprofit organization founded in 1986 with a mission of supporting a community of creative and business professionals with programs and resources to improve their effectiveness and the integrity of communications delivered through advertising, marketing programs, public relations, and other tactical efforts. If you'd like more information on NJCAMA, you can visit their website at njcama.org. At the conference on June 1st, there were three keynote presentations, and for the purposes of this podcast, we've broken that program into three separate podcasts. In this second program, we'll hear from Brian Eisenberg. Brian's the co-founder and chief persuasion officer of Future Now, a consulting firm. He's also the author of Waiting for Your Cat to Bark, Persuading Customers When They Don't Respond to Traditional Marketing. Brian's consultancy helps companies realize that the best way to maximize their results from marketing means incorporating expert persuasion techniques into their website design, their email marketing, and their other marketing tools. Brian's presentation runs just about an hour.
Waiting for your cat to bark. Somebody's bound to ask me, how the heck did you come up with that title? I'll get there. I will answer it for you. But the basic premise of the presentation is actually very simple. Since 2003, customers have increasingly been ignoring our marketing. Just a fact, and for a number of different factors that we'll go through. And the whole purpose of the presentation is to actually present to you a process which we developed called persuasion architecture that helps you overcome that. Does anybody notice that the customers are ignoring marketing? Here? Yeah. How many of you are actively ignoring other people's marketing? Yeah. And for good reasons. Now, one of the biggest things that we get when we do our presentations, because we use a lot of business to consumer examples, is that people think that this process only works for business to consumer. And we use a lot of business to consumer examples, and we'll show a little bit of both, because business to consumer is something that just about everybody understands how to buy, right? It's not everybody who understands the processing of a, you know, printing press, so to speak. And so we've worked with business-to-business and business-to-consumer sites, and we've done some pretty interesting things with them. So let's talk about the problem. Let's start with there. We're seeing headlines everywhere, right? The CMO of Verizon Wireless, John Stratton, complaining about ineffective mass marketing advertising platforms that continue to under-deliver. Now, my question to John is very simple. Is it the media that's the problem, or is it the customers? Have the customers also changed while we've been going through this evolution of media? Well, let's get some interesting statistics. Just recently, the ANA, the Association of National Advertising, polled 133 of their advertisers who control over $20 billion worth of advertising. And they found that 78% of the advertisers thought that the potency of their television advertisements have declined. They're really concerned because at this point, They're waiting for digital video recorders, right, TiVo and stuff like that, to reach 30 million households. And that's when 24% of them said they intend to cut their TV ad budgets. Right? How many people have seen all the news about the upfronts? Right? Real serious concerns. There's major rumblings going on. But here's a scarier fact, and probably a good fact, and one of the things I give Mike a lot of credit to, is that 80% said they'll invest more in web advertising. 68 singled out search as one of the most important channels that they'll actually focus on. Okay. Back in 2000, AJ Laffley, presenting to the ANA, gave a presentation as the CEO of Procter & Gamble. And he talked about three big points about the customer is boss. Number one, we're moving away from push towards pull. Maybe. We'll get there. Two, consumers will become more demanding. Yeah, it's about the experience. They expect more of an experience. For the last 30 years, customer service became an oxymoron. Okay? We're wanting it back again. We grew up with a generation where we got so much and so cheap. But no, we want the service. We want the experience. And then three, the customer wants to be in control, right? We don't want to be pushed. So let's look at what's going on. What is the average tenure of a CMO today? Anybody know? Less than 2 years. Actually, less than the gestation period of this cute little elephant. 23.7 months. Marketing is in a crisis. It's a serious crisis, and the CMOs are feeling it by losing their jobs. 54% of customers, okay? Here's an interesting. Resist being exposed to or paying attention to marketers. 56% avoid companies that overmarket to them. The worst one for all of us, 69% are actively going out there and getting ad blocking technology and skipping technology like TiVo. How many of you use TiVo? How many of you don't watch TV the way you used to a few years ago? iPods. How many of you have pop-up blockers and spam filters and all these things to block messages from getting in our way? Okay? Pretty scary. So now, how did we come up with the title? Very simple. Anybody here have a cat? Great. Anybody here have a dog? Anybody, and a few of you have both, right? What's the difference between a cat and a dog? Huh? I'm going to tell you the best answer. I was down in Fort Lauderdale doing a presentation. And this woman came to me and she said, here's the difference. A dog, okay, has a master. A cat has a staff. Someone else recently just told me the difference is, you know, you own a dog, but you feed a cat. But the difference is really important if we're truly to understand our customers. How many of you, and we won't age ourselves, but how many of you remember the little experiment with ringing the bell and dogs and saliva? And okay, it's where traditional marketing for 60 years have come from. If you recognize this gentleman, his name is J.B. Watson. J.B. Watson was an educator who was studying this guy, Ivan Pavlov, and his experiments with dogs. And what's funny is Ivan Pavlov got his Nobel Prize for studying digestion. And he used dogs, okay, because they had similar digestion systems to humans, right? They're omnivores. He did not get a prize for his concepts of branding. What happened is, as J.B. Watson was studying this, and those of you might remember his name, remember the little Albert experiment where he took a really loud noise and a little white mouse and he got kids scared of him? Well, as he was doing this, he ended up getting kicked out of academia for a sex scandal, okay? And he went to the next best place that would take him, J. Walter Thompson. Madison Avenue, of course, and he started teaching this concept of behavioral conditioning, right? If we ring the bell of advertising, customers will respond. And if you think about the surge in advertising that happened after World War II, customers were responding. Why? Because we had nothing, right? If you get a starving dog or a starving cat and you open up get the can opener, they're going to come running, okay? But the cat only comes to the can opener when it's really ready to come. And the problem is we've been trained like this for 60 years. If we ring, they'll respond. They're not responding the way they used to anymore. And customers are behaving a lot more like cats than like dogs. See, because what's happened is we've gotten all this technology that's given us control of how we interact with media, right? Google's goal, their number one goal in the world, okay, is to organize all the media that we access. That's it. That's all they're trying to do, okay? And so it's really put the customer in control of communication. It is no longer us pushing at them in one direction. right? And from a frontal view, they now have access to all information, 360. We can't hide anything. It's pretty scary. Now, this makes sense if you understand the history of sales and marketing. Now, depending on your religious persuasion, you know, you might think about the first sales being involving an apple. If not, it may have involved some other kind of exchange, you know, maybe an exchange of a wink or whatever, but it was an inexact form of a barter, okay? Now, what's happened is this has happened in every single media and every single time we've actually engaged in sales and marketing. There are just a few technologies that impact us over and over again. And what happened is, you know, when we went to this inefficient system where we had beads or salt, right? Everybody knows where the word salary comes from, okay? Because Roman soldiers used to get paid in salt or beads. Till eventually we got new technology called coin, currency, right? Payment technology revolutionized the way people were able to interact, okay? We're going to get another payment technology in probably, I would predict, the next 5 years, right? How many people have heard the problem of micropayments online, right? Micropayments are going to make a huge impact to how people interact with the world. It's just not there yet. We then went to sales technology, right? We had open air markets. Then we started having improvements in transportation, right? We started being able to have railroads. And from railroads, we had airplanes. And if you remember the old Sears catalog, they traveled along the rail lines, bringing products to people who didn't have them before. So again, another huge technology. Now all of a sudden, we had changes in communication, right? We had the telegraph, we had the telephone, we had the radio. Radio got television. Television eventually got to cable, and you had channels like Home Shopping Network and QVC. And eventually came along the internet. Now, every single one of these evolutions throughout time of sales and marketing, okay, they did one thing. They created less friction for the customer, but what did it do for the people who have to sell to them? Made it harder. We're at a point with the internet, okay, where there's enough broadband penetration, where there's enough mass, that the customer virtually has no friction. Guess what that means? If they have no friction, guess where all the friction lies? On us. Ouch. So what do we do about it? Well, it's not going to happen like this, okay? Here's what happens. Every single media, right, and the internet for the last 10 years has changed so much, and everyone talked about the new economy. Well, they were sort of wrong, but they were sort of right. Every single media that's come along beforehand, radio, print, television, cable, they've all done the exact same thing. In the beginning, before you have enough mass, you have to give away the media, usually to people who are direct marketers, who are willing to take, you know, cost per action deals. If it works, I'll keep. All of a sudden, you get some more people saying, oh, that's working for them. Let me keep trying. And then all of a sudden, you get the people saying, oh, you know, this works. Let's go spend some real money there. And guess what happens to the price of the media? It goes up. The price of internet media, I'm going to talk about in a second, is dirt cheap today. Ridiculously cheap. And too many people are not taking advantage of it. Now, we've talked about this overcoming of friction. This is the old model of overcoming friction. Anyone see the movie Glengarry Glen Ross? Okay, Alec Baldwin, I mean, it's quite a scene. But how did we overcome friction in the past, right? We used to beat people over the head with a hammer. Can't really do that anymore if they're in control, right? If they have objections, it's usually because they have some cognitive dissonance in their buying process. You haven't answered all their questions. And then we top it all off that we've been growing up with all these years of advertising, hyping things, 9 out of 10 dentists, we're the largest, we're the number one, and our BS meters have gotten over the top. And what do customers say now? Well, it's real simple. Give me a second. I think customers would like to express one sentiment to all us marketers.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
I want the truth. You can't handle it.
The fact of the matter is we are looking for the truth today. How many people here have bought a car in the last year, year and a half? Where did you start going to find the answers about the car you were going to buy? Where on the internet? Did you go to the manufacturer's site? Is that where you got all your answers? How come? Because you don't believe a thing the manufacturer tells you. That's the serious problem that the automobile industry, especially in the States, is dealing with today. Real critical issues. Now, classic marketing formula. Hollywood, right? How many people, you don't have to admit to seeing the movie, but how many people actually know about the movie and what happened, right? You took the leading lady, Jennifer Lopez, you took the leading male, Ben Affleck, create a little tabloid romance about them, and what's going to happen? You're going to have a what? Blockbuster. They didn't hope for a flop. And it ties back to the customer experience. Because the movie came out on a Wednesday. By Thursday, ticket sales dropped 18%. By Sunday, it was out of the theaters. Why? Because today we're connected. Now, I'm 36 years old. Some of you remember just a few years ago, calling internationally was a big deal. Today, calling internationally costs less than my brother who's a mile away. It's pretty scary, right? The way we communicate today has drastically changed the way customers interact. It's no longer our little circle of friends. It's friends all over the world, across the coast. It's changed tremendously. Now, while we're talking about great movies and great experiences, this was not one of them. However, it is probably the single best clip I've ever seen to understand sales and marketing. Anyone remember this movie, Joe Dirt, David Spade? As marketers, we tend to overvalue what we mean to our customers. And we're trying to sell snakes and cherry bombs. That's not supposed to happen. Oh, there we go. So it is. The experience is what is the brand today. It makes up the experience. It makes up everything about the brand. Every interaction, like Michael spoke about, is what creates it. So how do we make this and maximize it? How do we do more with this? Well, some of you may remember wonderful airlines when you used to fly right back in the 60s and 70s. How do people dress up to go on fly? Right? They used to dress up real nicely and all that. And they used to serve wonderful meals on tablecloths, and they used to be hot meals, and it used to be such a great experience. And they used to charge for that experience. But what did the airline industry want to do? They wanted to create cattle cars. They wanted to make it, because jets were faster, people wanted to travel more. So they couldn't keep that level of service and reduce prices to open it up for the masses. So what do they do instead of the hot meals? They give you warm mixed nuts. Now, that was great because it tied directly to their bottom line. It brought them a good ROI. And then they went ahead and they actually said, well, you know what? If we give them peanuts instead of mixed nuts, we can actually put dollars in our bank and they won't really notice the difference. And then, you know what? Forget about the peanuts. What if we give them pretzels? And we got this little 1 ounce bag of pretzels, okay, that don't really do much for me. But here's the point. Every single time, if it increased their bottom line, at what point in this evolution did they lose the customer? Michael mentioned it before. It took one company just to offer a few more snacks to create part of their experience. We do a lot with food, don't we? I mean, especially me, but anyway. Jeff Bezos gave a speech about a year and a half ago. He talked about how he wasn't going to spend any more money on advertising because it's better to actually buy word of mouth by spending the money to improve his service. He hasn't, but he said he did. So it's a wonderful quote. But the bottom line is he understands that it is about the experience. It's about what people are going to be talking about because the communication is so real. Now, how many people here have ever been to a Cabela's? Okay. This is actually taken off their website. It's a short little clip that just gives you a sense of what they're thinking about how they're redefining retail for sportsmen. Okay, as you can see, it is not your normal box store. They have mountains and they have an aquarium and they have restaurants, and it's become a destination as opposed to just selling stuff. Now, so how do we do this? How do we actually trigger word of mouth? If you ever go ahead and you want to analyze every single word of mouth that you've ever seen, it always falls out into three basic categories that trigger word of mouth. Number one, it's architectural. There's something about the way it's built, it's constructed, or the product design, like an iPod, that gets people talking about it, right? Were there MP3 players before the iPod? Tons of them, okay? But the iPod revolutionized the way it was designed, or the iMac is another great example. Number two, kinetic. It's about the performance. It is so much better and richer color in the copiers and any other that it doesn't even compare. So, of course, I'm going to be talking about it. Or how many of you remember before the elections, the jib-jab kind of going around, right? That was kinetic. It's created a huge word of mouth thing because the performance was over the top. And then the third, which is the most interesting one, which the airlines forgot, it's about being generous, okay? I have a buddy of mine who's in Springfield, Missouri, largest jeweler in the whole area. $10 million, it's a huge jewelry firm. $1 million is considered a good jewelry firm. He's doing $10 million in Springfield, Missouri, mind you. And he's known for one thing. If the battery in your watch goes out, whether you bought from him or not, he'll replace it. That's part of his word of mouth. What does it take to be the restaurant that goes ahead and gives away dessert. Flour, sugar, and water, that's cheap. But it creates an experience. Because at the end of the day, and again, Michael talked about this, this is your customer, and they're king. They're the boss. And we have to understand them above everything else. Because if our focus is on understanding them and creating great experiences, then we can actually get results. So, how do we measure those experiences? We talk about conversion. And a lot of people talk about conversion and think about it as a direct marketing metric. We actually don't. We're actually thinking about it more of just understanding and getting people to take the action you want them to take, while understanding that it's about helping them achieve their goals first. Because if it's all about your sales process, you're just going to get in their way. Because remember, the cat's in control. Now, Michael mentioned this, and again, I applaud you guys. I think Xerox is doing some wonderful things. Because a lot of companies are still not understanding that every category across the board is influenced by the web today. Every single category. There isn't a category that people aren't going on the web to shop for. Okay? And it's impacted the way the purchase decision has been. For those of you who might have studied, you know, general marketing in school, you remember the purchase decision process, right? You recognize the problem, you do a search, you evaluate, you decide, you purchase, you reevaluate. But here's what's happened. Last few years, these three guys have changed the way we search for solutions. Completely changed it. When Google decided to say, you know what, we're not going to be like Excite and Hasta La Vista and be full of spam. We're going to bring you back relevant results. It changed the way people buy. And then even the way they evaluate alternatives today. It's changed. We can't keep doing things the way we've done for the last 6 years. Right? Customers are gathering the information all over the place. How often is it that a customer comes to a salesperson, they actually know more about the product than the salesperson does? Happened to me in my car dealership. Actually happened in two car dealerships. The story's in the book. And we talked about blogs, right? Marketers are concerned about blogs in Forbes in November of 2005. They destroy brands and wreck lives. Is there any way to fight back? Guess what? There isn't. Because the customer wants that open and honest communication. They want you to be out there and give them all the information they're looking for. And for those companies who think they don't sell on the web, they're wrong. They can keep thinking that way because it's not like we're going to go ahead and plop a credit card down for $300,000 piece of excavating equipment. But can you surely sell on the web? Well, our client Volvo Construction, sure happy they do. 56% of marketing executives are now saying, from this year, say that the web is either the hub of their marketing organization or will be. Because the web is the glue that binds all of our marketing communications today. Julie Rome from Chrysler Group. The objective is to make interaction the center of the marketing strategy so that consumers can be spoken to individually. Our strategy is that all media is going to become two-way. I don't know if all media will get there, right? Radio hasn't changed that much. Print hasn't changed that much. But we're getting there. We definitely understand that. So great. I think everybody's aware of the problem. But there's a bigger problem that I'm concerned about. Since 1998, the only thing my company's focused on is conversion rates. When everybody was talking eyeballs and new economy, we were saying, nah, conversion rates are not good. And they're only getting worse. Okay? They've been dropping year after year. Now, those of you who've been online for a while, I'll ask you a couple of very simple questions. Compared to 2002, today's websites, better designed, better technology, more usable. How many of you remember going to add something to a shopping cart and nothing happened? Right? It's happened to all of us. We have web analytics, real-time web analytics. We've got A/B testing. All these technologies today to improve the experience. So why are conversion rates going down? Maybe because people haven't figured out how to use this medium properly yet. 10 years does not make an expert, unfortunately. Now, here's what's going to scare you. We talked about this a little bit. Traffic cost inflation. This is a chart Mary Meeker gave Morgan Stanley Research. If you look at this line here, it shows how much advertising dollars are being spent per household. On the internet, online, there's only $145 being spent per household. If you come all the way up here to newspapers, and let's forget about their classifieds for a minute, just newspaper placement ads, it's $674 per household. Now, what's happening to the readership in newspapers? Declining. Who's got a better demographic? The web. But yet the cost of the media is 4 times plus less than newspapers. This is basic supply and demand. Everybody's saying, oh, web's going to be the hub of our organization, so we're going to have a lot more demand. What is Google and Yahoo and everyone complaining about? Not enough supply. Anyone remember their economics? What has to happen to prices? They're going to skyrocket. So, 34% of media time spent online, but only 6% of the budget. And you've got guys like the CEO of Blue Nile, Mark Vaden, who's complained that all his top keywords this past year have gone up by 80%. Anybody else experiencing this? It's going to keep going up 4, 5, 6 times guaranteed. How do I know this for sure? Well, let me give you an example. Anyone know what the term mesothelioma is? Yeah, it's the cancer caused from asbestos. But it also holds a very interesting distinction on the web. It's the most expensive keyword. Most expensive keyword. And so if you do a search for mesothelioma, you've got all these lawyers spending somewhere between $50 to $100 per click. How many of you, if you were spending $50 to $100 per click, would be a lot more careful about what you do online? Right? So here's what happens. You do a search, you land on their page, and they tell you right away, the David Law Firm PC represents people with mesothelioma. There's a hyperlink. Want more information? Go ahead. There's a whole bunch of information. Now, this is obvious, but let's look at what happens. Google created a system so simple that virtually any monkey in the world can create an ad. It's never happened before, right? No one could create print ads that easily. No one could create video ads. TV commercials cost $2 million. It's not an accident. But does it take any genius to create a little text ad? No. So if we take those monkeys and all these people who are going to be doing more advertising, and then we take a little thing about what Eric Schmidt said at his analyst meeting, who's the CEO of Google. He said, it does not look like any specific segment has topped out, adding that he saw significant capacity to charge advertisers more for Google's pay-per-click search results. Congratulations. He needs to keep that valuation up somehow. It's going to be off your backs. And it's fair, because it has to go up. The medium has to go up. But you remember Google, right? They're the company that said, do no evil. Yeah, see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. Anyway, here's what's happening. 2%. Why are people happy with this 2% conversion rate? Is what? No. Well, it's not, that's a good answer. People are happy with the 2% conversion rate because 2% is a magic number in direct mail, right? 2% is successful. But let me ask you a question. In direct mail, we get a list, right? We segment it. We push something out towards customers. And then we hope 3 weeks later that they respond. When they come to you online, have they been pushed? No. So should the conversion rates be the same? No, doesn't make sense. But at 2% in direct mail, since we were profitable, everyone's screaming best practices. We can keep doing this. There are companies out there having huge, huge, much higher percent conversion rates, 30, 20s, very high. And we came out with a book last year called Call to Action, which just dealt with how little techniques to tweak conversion rate. Not understanding why things were happening, but techniques on how to do it. And using only online methods and no marketing, we were able to take that book to a New York Times, Wall Street Journal, USA Today bestseller. And top companies all across the globe are using this now as their Bible, essentially, in how to improve their website's conversion rates. And so all these people trying to study how to improve the conversion rates are looking at web analytics reports like funnels or what we call scenario analysis that disappeared. And what they're doing, unfortunately, is they're trying to get these whole bunch of monkeys to recreate Shakespeare. To basically, by tweaking out the analytics, which is dangerous because what happens is if you haven't planned for all these interactions, all you get is a lot of noise and very little signal. Now, I'm also chairman of the Web Analytics Association. So when I'm talking about it, it's because I really care about the topic. And I think a lot of people misunderstand what web analytics actually does. Web analytics measures conversions. Every click-through, every single time someone clicks on a website, they had to make a decision to make a click. Unless they have like a bad tick or something, they had to make a decision to take a click. To make that decision, you have to persuade them. That's where we come up with this concept called persuasion architecture, right? They're only concerned about how we buy. So if they're in control and they're clicking through, if the focus is not on addressing how they buy, then we've missed it. Three reasons why our websites fail. We didn't understand our visitors' needs. We didn't help them complete their objective, or they had a negative experience with our brand. That simple. Now, Jacob Nielsen, who's been the uber guru of online for the last bomb and boost and all of that, is a usability guy from Sun Park. And for 7 years, he's been telling people what the problem is without giving them the answer. He said, for almost 7 years, my studies have shown the same user behavior. Users ignore the navigation areas of the website, right, the top and the middle, and they focus exclusively on the content. So many of us are worried about what bucket pages are going to fall into, and we don't realize it's about the content. If they land on a page and it doesn't appear relevant to their goals, they click the back button. We do it every day. My good friend, Jared Spool, who runs a usability lab, also a very well-known guy up in Boston, ran a study he called the Lincoln Study. And he took people and he found out what they were interested in. He put them in front of the websites. And if they were interested in new cars, guess what they clicked on? New cars. If they're looking for a used SUV, what would they click on? Used SUV. If they're looking for a sedan with options, that's what they click on. So here's what's interesting. What he found is that when they were successful in their mission, 72% of the time, the trigger word, the word that they had in their head, what they were looking for, was actually found on the page. When they were unsuccessful, the word only appeared on the site, on the page, 6% of the time. Pretty obvious. So he calls this the move forward until found rule. He says a page either can do one of two things. Either it has the content the user's looking for, or links to the content they're looking for, or they click the back button. Even Google will tell you how important scent is. This is a research line talking about how all ads must have scent. This is not just online. The reason customers ignore ads is because a lot of the ads are irrelevant, right? How many people remember the Taco Bell commercial with the little chihuahua? Didn't sell many, you know, many burritos, but it sure sold a lot of chihuahuas, okay? Because it was irrelevant to the messaging. Now, here's a real example of bad scent on Google. My brother's significant other has older dogs, and she did a search because they had bowel problems for dog plus diarrhea. And here's an example of a real marketing monkey. Dog diarrhea. Huge selection of dog diarrhea. Low prices. Cheap shipping. Secure. MonsterMarketplace.com. That's bad scent. More ways than one. Now, it's not just Monster Marketplace. It's across the board. Sony Plasma TV. Not an unreasonable search, is it? Go ahead. I asked my mom to go look for Sony TV. And she went ahead and she landed on the Circuit City site. And here's the first TV they showed her, a Sony 7-inch LCD TV clock radio. Guess what? No plasma. As you keep scrolling down the page, the word plasma doesn't even show up once. Again, it's irrelevant to how she wants to buy. Wait, she decided, let me go and visit Sony. This is what Sony put up. What are the Sony trying to sell you? Computers. Where's the TVs? Just as a side note, Sony doesn't make plasma TVs. Why? Because they think LCD technology is better. Could they have come up with a page that said, why you shouldn't buy a plasma TV and focus on LCD technology? You'll be happier and save money. Yeah, but they don't understand why people would type in that term. So I decided to see if my colleagues in web analytics understood this better, because web analytics measures this stuff. They should know if it's working or not. So I go ahead and do a search for web analytics consulting, and I land on NetTracker. NetTracker is a software company that only sells software, no consulting. You're not going to find anything about consulting. Could they have come up with a page that said, hey, you know what? You don't need web analytics consulting. You need a software product that's so easy that you can get the same results. Yeah, but they didn't do it. Go ahead, and you keep clicking. You get to eWork Markets. These guys are just general consulting firms. They try to connect people. Nothing about web analytics. And you keep doing. I go to another link on Yahoo. They get me to SEO Inc. And nothing about web analytics, all about search engine optimization. I'm a little frustrated. I go ahead, do a search a couple months later, and I find this company, web analytics consulting, Stratagent. What does Stratagent do? Oh, look at the top. Web analytics consulting. Now, here's the problem. How many of you, anybody here have a design background? Great. What is Stratagent trying to get you to do here? What's the action they want you to take on the site? Learn more, which is what? Their free newsletter. Doesn't help you buy web analytics consulting. It's their sales process getting away from the buying process. Again, this is friction. Did a search again for web analytics. I got a company called Zaz. They're one of the largest firms in web analytics consulting. They just partnered with Google recently. Get there, and they take you to their homepage. You see anything here about web analytics? Now, if you're willing to dig, and you click once on their services link, and then you click on web analytics, they take you to a page. Why didn't they take me here in the first place? They should know better. This is why the 2% is really scary. Again, this is an example of bad sense. Now, how critical is this problem? This is the typical drop-off curve for every single website on the web. Okay? 80% of traffic drops off within the first three clicks. Now, anybody here ever been in retail? Imagine that if you're in retail, if you walked into a store and a customer came in and they fell within the first three steps because of a mat that you had down there, how long would it take for you to replace that mat? Seconds. But the problem is 80% of the traffic is dropping off within the first three clicks. And because the numbers are so large, we can't even visualize these customers slipping, that we don't do much about it. Now, here's the scary part. About 10% drop off within the first click. I call that accidental traffic. They got there by accident. They were looking for Fuji water, right? Not the island of Fuji. Okay, no problem. But where it gets really scary is this next step. About 55% of people drop off at the second click. In other words, I walked into your store because I'm interested in electronics. I see you have an electronics store. I take my first step in. I'm like, no, you suck. I'm gone. And that's the Brooklyn technical term for it, okay? But this is what's happening, okay? It's pretty sad. Now, I want to give an example that's much broader. How many people remember the Super Bowl commercials? Okay. Here was an ad. Again, it was probably a pretty lousy ad, but probably the Super Bowl, realizing that the persona they were dealing with are these aggressive men, and women don't buy domain names, right? Right? There's no women who buy a domain name? Okay. But they ran this commercial, and it was very successful. They ran it twice, in fact. They spent $5 million, okay, to drive 1,100 times the traffic they're used to getting. Not only that, a few weeks later, the campaign came out, and they found out they increased sales by 35%. Hugely successful. My question is, did they leave money on the table? You be the judge. At the end of this commercial, they have a tagline up there that basically says, there's more at GoDaddy.com. So what would you assume? What should you do next? Go to GoDaddy.com. Great. This was their homepage. Now, for those of you who remember the GoDaddy girl, does that look like the GoDaddy girl? Do you see anything about there's more at GoDaddy? No. So I went ahead and I started clicking around because I want to find out where was there more. So there's a little link over here that says TV commercials. But up here, Bob Parsons says our Super Bowl ad was most popular. I can prove it. See it in web only cut plus rejects here. That's not the GoDaddy girl. That's not more. Finally, you go ahead and you click and you get here, and here it takes you to a page. What would it have taken to throw this up? Well, I went ahead and just took about 30 seconds and redid their homepage. Not a whole bunch of work, but would this have been more effective? Instead of 35%, would they maybe have increased it 50%? I don't know. So even as good as it is, people still leaving money on the table. They just redesigned again. Is that the GoDaddy girl? Why spend all their money focusing on one brand model and then all of a sudden show you soccer mom? Sorry, Mike, I didn't even put it together, but we actually did a search for photocopiers. Photocopiers. Anyone ever buy a photocopier here? Yeah. Did a search. Clicked on some of the ads. First ad here was HP. Gonna get there. But I clicked on Staples. First thing they asked me for is their zip code. Are you telling me that the only place they're going to get a computer is from my local Staples? I hope not, because it sucks. But this is their sales process getting in the way. Eventually, you can get to a page that gives you some more details, okay? But why get in the way? This is what HP does. I click on the ad, and all it wants me to do is go to bed. If I type in photocopier, and you guys sell photocopiers, right? If I type in photocopier, does that mean I'm ready to buy? Does that mean that I'm ready for a trial? No. I want more information about knowing what photocopier. But the sales process gets in the way again. If you dig around enough, they've got this nice little page, color, multifunction, all in one, help me choose a printer, and they show you all the different kinds. And if you keep clicking, they have a little salesperson kind of thing, interactive guide, that guides you to pick the right ones. Either one of those pages would have been hugely better than what they're doing. But people are copying all these experts and waiting to get the 2 and 2.2%. Let me show you somebody who really gets it. They've got a process that's down pat. This is a banner ad one of my staff found on a site. Now, here's what they do consistently. We talk about consistent of advertising. You've got the brand, you've got your offer, and you've got your image. Get to their landing page, brand, offer, image, free second-day delivery, very sexy. Not only that, if you click through again on the image, it actually takes you to the product category over and over and over again. They can even do this with sweaters. It's not just pretty women in bras. It's sweaters. Do the same thing. Brand, image, offer. There you go again. Now, my only question is, do they keep this up throughout their whole checkout process? You know, as you keep buying. But this is a process, and they get it. What they're doing is planning an experience different than most. See, there are two ways to plan an experience. Anybody recognize this wonderful city of efficiency? Yeah, Washington, D.C. Anyone know how it was? Who planned it? L'Enfant. There he is. And what he wanted to do is create a city that had not just grids, because grids create gridlock. He wanted to create a city that had not like the old European cities, but had these, you know, these grids and ovals and diagonals to really enhance the way people navigate through the city. As opposed to this wonderful city, probably the worst city I think in the country to drive in. Anyone recognize it? Boston. Or it looks similar to downtown Manhattan as well. Okay? You could be driving one way and all of a sudden there's like six cars coming in at you. It's really bizarre. Anyone know who the city planners were for Boston? They weren't as intelligent as L'Enfant. Yeah. Cow paths. What happened was cows grazed and they went around in circles and they did their own thing, and they're not very energetic and very enthusiastic creatures. And when the townspeople said, you know, the city's, this little town is growing, what if we take that cow path and we clean it up a bit and we widen it? And then eventually we pave it. And then we'll do some A-B testing and web analytics and we'll dress it up and redesign it and it'll look all beautiful and pretty, right? We'll put some flowers on it. But does it make the experience any better? No. Two ways that people are planning paths. Most sites today and most marketing today is focused on doing cow paths and hoping that things become a success. Our viewpoint is slightly different. It's a Six Sigma approach, saying that every single time a customer does not convert, does not take the action you expected them to take in your model, it's because you didn't understand them and you created the defect in your system. Somehow they engaged with you and it broke apart. Because here's what's happening. You've got your whole universe of prospects and your goal is to put them through your marketing machine, right? As ugly as it may be, your customer service, your retail stores, your website, whatever it is, and eventually get them through so that they become customers and hopefully loyal customers and speak great about you. So how do we do that? Well, it's very simple. We've created a process based on three questions. Number one, who are we trying to persuade to take action? Number two, what is the action we want them to take? And we'll talk about micro and macro in a second. And then number three, what does this person need in order to feel comfortable to take that action? Okay. Number one, who? How many people remember the golden rule? What is it? Yeah, most marketers take it too much to heart. See, we talk about it in the book, Waiting for Your Cat to Bark. Lisa, who co-wrote the book with us, decided to serve us toast. And she is as undomesticated as you can. Toast is probably her best gourmet meal. And she served this toast just the way she loves it. I mean, she took real good care of it, so it's lightly browned and with a little bit of butter and everything like that. And she served it up to my brother. And Jeffrey goes, I hate it like this. He's not the most diplomatic at times, especially with those he loves. And what happens, Jeffrey loves toast that's like charcoal. So instead of thinking about do unto others as we'd want done unto them, unto ourselves, what about do unto others the way they want done unto themselves? So how do we do that? Well, we start with the universe of buyers, and it's doing weird things. Sorry. Told you, I just switched to Office 2007 beta. That's why I was missing all that image. Basically, the way we do it is we plan with the universe of buyers. Since the time of Socrates and Aristotle, there's basically been four types of people, right? Based on hemispheres of brain, psychographics. And you could talk about competitive and spontaneous and humanistic and methodical. And if you take those people and you put them into different categories based on where they are in the buying process, they know exactly what they're looking for, they know approximately what they're looking for, or they're just browsing, you now have a universe of about 12 different types of buyers in terms of how they prefer to gather information and make decisions. Real important, especially for understanding the web. And then what we do is actually define the sales complexity. How many people have heard of a complex sale? We decided to go Googling what people mean by complex sale. And you know what the standard definition is? It's a sale that's complex. Yeah. It involves a lot of people, involves a lot of money, blah, blah, blah. We actually found out complex sales falls into four categories. Need, risk, knowledge, and consensus. And let me give you a perfect example of this. Anybody here have, especially teenagers, more than one? You ever try to take a family vacation? That's a complex sale. Okay? So it has nothing to do about corporate B2B, B2C. Why it's so important to understand all these factors and the psychographics is because that determines how customers come at you, what angle of approach, even what keywords they'll use, who they'll call up, what ad they'll respond to, because it affects their angle of approach. Now, let me give you a perfect example of a marketer who doesn't understand this. I have two kids. I have a 5-year-old little princess, and my son will be a year old tomorrow. And my brother actually bought him this wonderful gift. It's a great name, the Lamaze Multisensory Clutch Cube. Completely memorable. Great branding. All I know, and all Sammy knows, is that sometimes it's his floppy toy. And then other times, it's his chewy toy. And other times, it's just about patterns, or it's crinkly. Okay? How he approaches it matters. How are customers approaching you? We don't have control of it anymore. We need to anticipate all the angles that they may approach us at. It's a lot of hard work. And so instead of thinking of your average customer and how to please them, build one pipeline that'll satisfy everybody, what we do is we create personas, multiple pipelines, that create individual experiences for each one. Because you can't treat everybody the same. Is anybody here average? Would you want to be treated as average? No. We need to think about typical, not average. So we create personas, and we build them on three basic parts: topology, psychographics, and demographics. Topology means you can have the same person who's very spontaneous, but if they're buying jet engines, I hope they're not as spontaneous. Okay? So you need to understand all these three dimensions. Then we focus on the macro and micro actions. Now, this is the route I take to go from Jeffrey's house all the way to the office. Now, I drive with Jeffrey pretty much every morning. It's about the only time we ever get a chance to talk. He's in Las Vegas today while I'm here. And anywhere along the way, right, he has a goal to get to the office. Anywhere along the way, those little micro actions, those little steps can detract him. Just like we saw all the scent examples that fell apart. Those are the bumps, the friction that our customers are experiencing. So the macro actions are the big goal. The micro actions are all the little decisions in the way till the point that someone buys. So we've got the first part. If we understand our personas and we understand their motivations, why they're buying, what their problems are, and how we can solve them, we can plan custom scenarios. I'm going to talk about that in a minute. Then we can give them the proper offer and then make it easy for them to take action. So we talked about the funnel before. How many people here have a sales funnel? Anybody? If you think about your sales funnel, most people like to think of it as a linear fashion, basically, right? You've got your prospects, your leads, your goals, right, all the way to the final sale. The problem is the customer, as they're going through your funnel, never goes through it that linearly. They like to bounce around. What happens is, as the customer is going through their buying process, I'm going to focus in on these two points for a moment. Waypoints are the parts of your sales process that they want communicated to them. They need to understand your high-value selling points. But along the way, they have questions that you've forgotten about because you're so into your own bottle that we call the points of resolution. What it is that they need to know. Now, I'm going to make this crystal clear for everybody in a second with a final example. And so we plan out these scenarios, and we have these steps to how to do it. And again, we'll go into a lot of detail on this in the book. But let's focus on two personas that we actually designed for Leo Schachter. Leo Schachter is the number one branded diamond wholesaler in the country. They sell through stores like Jared and Kay. And we created two personas, Mr. David C. and Natalie G. David, I'm going to give you a little quote. He's a very young, conservative guy. He knows very little about diamonds. He's very cautious and stuff like that, very methodical. And he says, Emily and I see eye to eye on most financial matters. But I know damn well that when it comes to an engagement ring, she will probably hope I throw caution to the wind. And then you have Natalie, who's been grown up around money. She's a fashion store buyer and all of that. And she says, Charlie drives a BMW, which is really cool. So why shouldn't I have a fabulous bauble to show off? I've always repeated my mother's mantra, it's just as easy to fall in love with a guy who has money than one who doesn't. So why choose one who doesn't? Now, this is all research verified by Beers and many, many salespeople. These are the people who come buying, 2 out of the 5 of them. And these are just little quotes of them. They're pages long of information. Well, I'm going to be talking about how they navigate the Leo Diamond. Whoa, decided to advance on its own. And it won't go back. There it is. How they both approach this one page called the Diamond Settings page. Okay? So what happens? David, who's early in the buying process, wants to learn about diamonds. So he does a search learning about diamonds. And he finds Matter of fact, Leo Diamonds has number one and number two rankings in there. And now, anybody here very methodical? Think about the language that we use just for David here. How do I choose a diamond? A step-by-step guide, an important decision. Should do the research just as you would before you buy stock or real estate. It could cost you a bundle. Your goal should be to approach the diamond counter as an educated consumer. Is this content that would appeal to a very methodical person? Yeah. He clicks through. Now, this is, of course, a point of resolution. Because he's just trying to gather more information. Because anybody here who's ever bought a diamond or knows nothing about a diamond has heard about the four C's. Well, Leo Schachter doesn't sell on the four C's. They understand that it's about the brilliance. It's how much it sparkles and looks pretty. So David, as he's navigating, may hit the four C's. And then eventually, as he keeps going through his points of resolution, may land up on the diamond settings page. And that will eventually take him to this beauty brilliance page. This is a critical page for everybody, because this is about their brand. It's about the brilliance. Now, this copy in here that talks about brilliant diamonds explode with light, catching people's eyes inadvertently, sparkling in candlelight, adding elegance and glamour to a woman's whole being. It's about the oohs and the ahs. How many people think that's appealing to David? It's not. So what we did is we created a very scientific-looking image, so he'll stick around to get past that. And it works. I'll show you how much in a minute. Natalie went ahead and does a search for the perfect diamond. She gets to the perfect diamond page. Most perfect diamond he could give me. You've got the perfect man, now you need the perfect diamond, the one you hoped for, right? And she gets all the way through the page and she sees what's new, fun, and fabulous in diamond engagement rings. And she clicks through and she reads new trends, ultimate prize, gets through, oh, see what other women are making about settings. And she gets to the settings page, and here's language for her. Diamond settings are the platform or the stage in which your diamond sits. Show off the beauty of your diamond. And eventually, she gets to this beauty brilliance page, and we already talked about some of the copy that's there, and talks about the most perfect diamond he can give you. So what happened? This is the journeys. They both started out at search. They got to what we call these funnel points, and they went through their points of resolution, and they landed on a page called Diamond Settings. For one of them, it was still, for David, it was still a point of resolution. But for Natalie, it's a critical part of her waypoint. It's about that stage for her. It's critical. And eventually, they have different goals. And what happens is with most analytics is they focus in on very simple, not on the page, but they're not focusing in on the whole scenario, the journey of the customer. It's just a different perspective. It's all about context. So what happened? Using the same designer, same copywriter, same developers, Leo Schachter went from a 0.86% conversion rate to a 54.1% conversion rate of people trying to find a local jeweler. Not 2%, not 3%. It's a 5,500% increase. So how do we do this? Here's the process, real simple. Number one, uncover your personas. You can't create a great customer experience if you don't know who your customers are. Create the models so you understand what interactions they're looking for. Two, plan their journeys through persuasive scenarios. Three, storyboard the creative. Make sure it's all working right. You know what? Test its effectiveness. When you release that piece before it goes out, call up that 800 number, right? Make sure it's working right. You implement it, send it all out, and then measure the scenarios to optimize results. You don't have to focus on so many metrics. So I'm going to leave you with a little last little story to kind of hopefully tie in everything. How many people here have heard of the old axiom AIDA for marketing, right? Attention, interest, desire, action, right? It's also for salespeople. And so real simple, you've got this little dog who's playing with his ball, and you want to get his attention. What would get a dog's attention? Huh? Food. Yeah. So we throw out a steak. Now all of a sudden we've got his interest. He's smelling the steak. And as he's getting closer and closer to it, his desire is building up. And as he gets real close, he's ready to take action. He jumps on the steak, and this is where most marketers fail because the model AIDA doesn't work. It's not about getting customers to take action. It's about what? Satisfying them. Because if that steak was rubber, he'd leave again. And that's where most marketers have failed. It's about constantly satisfying them in every click and in the whole experience. Now, what's really important to remember is that meat, relevance, scent, whatever you want to call it, is what's at the heart of the dog. Can't be rubber. It's got to be real meat. And not only is it in the heart of the dog, it also happens to be what's important in the heart of the cat. Now, I know we only have like 2 minutes for questions because lots of technical difficulties, but...
What do you do when you work with clients who don't know anything about their customers? You'll say to them, tell me a little bit about your customers. What do they like? What don't they like? That type of thing. And they don't understand their own customer.
There's two things. The number one thing is I usually say, let's not work with the customer. Why? Because at the end of the day, if they don't know their customer, they're sleeping dead. It's only a matter of time until they fail. You can, or you can start advising, let's go figure out and do some research to understand their customer. We worked with Universal Orlando, and we don't really mention it much in the book, but they're a company that has 25 yards full of research about their customers. But none of their information was tying into why people were coming into the parks. Not really real close. They understood where they came from, how much they spent, all those kind of details, but nothing tied to their motivations. And so he said, okay, you know what? The things don't jive. What if we just go ahead and we do a new research project? And we came up with a plan to interview people in the park, and we were able to get a little bit of psychographic information on them using a persuasion analyzer. Anyone knows those are the little dial pads that you can kind of show how things? And so the methodical people went, they dialed slowly, spontaneous people real quick, and then went back and forth. I mean, it was real interesting to watch. And that let us know more about the customer so we can start developing it. But there usually are people in the company who know about the customer, whether it's a salesperson or customer service. It's a question of how accessible they want to be to it. One last question.
How do you go about locating your prospects for this kind of persuasion approach?
It's actually very interesting. We have no outbound sales force. We have no traditional marketing. Everything we do has been about publishing and writing. We've been doing this now. If you go to Clixi, you'll find about 250 columns over the last 5 years that I've written. And everyone is a direct thing, and it's repeat customers. When you start going to Universal Orlando and increasing their ticket sales after they've been trying to do things for 5 years and they haven't been able to nudge the needle and increase their sales by 80%, we just saw this as a media mentioned a couple weeks ago, and we had nothing to do with it. They were excited to tell the story. So that's where most of our customers actually come from. Yeah, it's the difference between cats and dogs, right? The customers today are acting a lot more like cats, right? And so it's from the beginning of the presentation. And so we go through the whole story in the very early part of the book and try to do that. So I've learned one real important lesson today. Never use beta technology when you're trying to do a presentation. So I thank you all for that. Very important lesson.
And that concludes part two of our three-part series of podcasts from the New Jersey Communications, Advertising, and Marketing Association's Spring Conference held in Princeton, New Jersey on June 1st. We will have part three of the program in our next podcast episode. Before we go, though, we'd like to ask you to participate in our listener survey. We're now testing some audience tracking technology from a service called podtrack.com. And as part of that experiment, we'd like to learn more about our listeners, so we'd really like you to take part in the survey for the podcast. How you do that is you look for the click-through button for the survey in the sidebar of the podcast blog. That's at lubetkinsotherblog.blogspot.com. Or if it's easier for you, you can just visit www.lubetkin.net, our homepage. And in the right-hand column of the homepage, you'll find a survey icon with text hyperlinks for surveys for each of our podcast programs. And you're certainly invited to visit all of those or any of those to complete the survey for the different podcasts that we produce. Now, if you have comments or suggestions about the podcasts, please send them to us. We'd love to use them in a future podcast. The email address is steve@lubetkin.net. We'd certainly also like to use audio comments in a future podcast, so please feel free to send us an MP3 file with your comments. We produce these programs in our studios in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. This is Steve Lubetkin. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you out there on the net. Take good care.
This podcast is a proud member of the New Jersey Podcasters Association.
Hey, you got a problem with that?